This is Danny Dave and Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
We've got Mark Schlereth with us here on the Venue Kings hotline. Did I get it right?
No.
God.
Mark Schlereth.
No, not even.
Schlereth.
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 Yeah.
Just call him Stink.
Stink.
Yeah. That's good. That's all good.
Mark, what can you tell us about the backup quarterback the Seahawks just signed in Paxton Lynch? We hear he might like to play video games.
Yeah, you know, it's a shame because obviously he put himself, I think, in Denver in a really tough position. But again, you know, I don't feel sorry for him. I mean, just because you play a pro sport doesn't make you professional. And you know, he came here, the word on the street, just he wasn't professional. He wasn't mature enough to handle being a first-round pick. Now, he's exceptionally talented. He can run. He can move. You've seen him. He's 6'7". He's got an absolute hose. But, you know, it just never really understood what it is to play professional football. And, you know, last guy in, first guy out, that type of, you know, philosophy obviously is going to get you fired. That's exactly what happened here. And, you know, you look at it, you watch him practice, and you watch him over the years. It just never synced up. He's what I would call a sight thrower. So a guy that wasn't anticipatory, a guy that didn't necessarily understand the defense. He was just watching a receiver and trying to get it, get him the ball. So there's a huge growing curve or a huge learning curve here. And you just hope that, you know, it's a humbling experience. And all of us have to learn to some degree when we get into the NFL. It's a different game than the game you played in college. And you have to, you know, you have to accept it and you have to understand it. And it really is one of those things you have to work at. And, you know, for all intents and purposes, he just didn't have the work ethic at that time to be a competent NFL quarterback.
You know, Mark, I've been thinking about you all year, every time Baker Mayfield comes up. Because last year, he supposedly got in some kind of a Twitter battle with you, and your quote was that he hasn't squirted a drop of pee in the NFL bucket yet. And then this year, when he was staring down Hugh Jackson, a guy who is, you know, coached in the league since before his mama was wiping his little bottom. It just drove me nuts with him. And then another thing I saw, Sam Darnold sat in on the meeting to hire Adam Gase. I mean, a rookie quarterback. It just, to me, are they letting these quarterbacks, they need to be put in their place, in other words.
Yeah, well, of course they do. Now, with that said, I did a Cleveland game and I got to, you know, sit down with Baker and talk to him. And I tell you what, I was so impressed with watching him at practice. He certainly had, you know, the respect of his teammates. And, you know, he plays with great, he just plays with a great passion for the game. And, you know, sometimes he probably is a little over the top and rubs people the wrong way. But I'm telling you, that was a kid that I really kind of enjoyed and learned to go, well, you know what? He could play. And so I know he does some things that probably from a maturity standpoint aren't the greatest, but he has that huge chip on his shoulder. He uses it to his advantage. And like I said, man, he was really impressive watching him not only in practice, but watching him in the game. And he certainly has the, you know, the love and respect of his teammates. So, you know, I just judge him on that and say, man, he was pretty exceptional at that point. Yeah, the whole thing, you know, the whole thing drives me crazy in that, you know, we're looking at this from the standpoint of, hey, man, if you rubbed up against Sean McVay in the shower, you're an automatic candidate for getting a job. And like Sean McVay, I've done three of his games. He's one of the most exceptional human beings I've ever met. Like, I got done meeting with him, Dave. He's 32 years old, and I walked out of the meeting going, I've accomplished nothing in my life, and I'm nothing more than a loser. You know, that's how I felt. The energy that he brought. And here's the crazy thing to me. If you think that because somebody bumped up against him and is young, you're going to communicate well with your players, I think you're stupid. As an owner, I just think you're dumb. I mean, you can either communicate with people or you can't. Pete Carroll is one of the oldest coaches, if not the oldest coach in football right now. And he has a great rapport with his players, a great ability to communicate. Wade Phillips, the defensive coordinator for the Los Angeles Rams, is one of the great communicators, one of the best I've ever seen at dealing with his team and his players. And he's 71, 72 years old. So you either have that skill set or you don't. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that's really driving me crazy, you mentioned, you know, that you're going to take a rookie quarterback in there and sit down to whether you're going to hire Adam Gase or not. The other thing that has driven me crazy about this is, hey, we need to be, you know, forward thinking, and we need to be a team that's going to hire some young guy and he's going to revolutionize football. Everybody runs the same crap. I do games every week. I do 50 hours of film study or film prep. Everybody runs the same stuff. I can put on my laptop. I've got the NFL pack or the NFL Exos, what the coaches have. I get it from a team, and I can go, okay, give me 11 personnel, 3-by-1 formations, and within, and I'll say, give me that from week 13, and it'll collate that in 30 seconds. And I can watch every team's 3-by-1 formations. So what used to take you 3 days takes you 3 hours now as a coach. They're all stealing each other's stuff. They're all doing the same things. So I don't know how much innovation there truly is. And you show me the playoffs during this whole playoff run, the team that captured and dominated the line of scrimmage won every single game in the playoffs so far. Like, how new school is that?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I just talk a little bit about that, because everybody's talking about how, oh my gosh, offenses now have just taken over, and you know, you feel like going into the draft that that, you know, I don't see any plays that I haven't seen before, to your point. And you know, defense is going to come back, but just the fact that they have like the top four offensive teams in the playoffs, I feel like everybody thinks, oh my gosh, the game has entirely changed.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% with you. You know, there's some more of the RPO college game, but you know, I did that at the University of Idaho in 1986. You know, we were running RPO stuff. So it's not like a new concept. It's just really come back into vogue. And then with the college kind of, you know, spread, you know, fake the handoff and have the one receiver run an X drift. You know, I mean, it's really simple stuff. And so there are some, you know, collegiate quote unquote concepts, but everybody's taking them and everybody's running them. So it's not like unique to any one particular team. You know, if you've got a quarterback that can really run, then it makes you that much more effective. And especially if you have a quarterback like you guys have in Seattle, who is an exceptional athlete, but more importantly, he's an exceptional quarterback. So he makes that fake and you worry about it, but he can eviscerate you through the passing game. But there's not a lot. I think the one thing, talking to a bunch of general managers about this, because I've reached out to guys that I know in the business and said, okay, what is, from an innovation standpoint, what's important? And the one thing I got back on a consistent basis, Dave, was your running game has to really line up and sync up with your play action. And the issue that a lot of teams have right now is they'll run a hodgepodge of runs. You know, they'll run some gap, they'll run some power, they'll run some, you know, some zone, they'll run whatever. And their play action looks nothing like what they run. And those teams don't create deceptives and big plays in the passing game. Then you start to look at what the Rams do or some of these other teams like New England does. New England will run a bunch of wham stuff. They've got wham pass off of that. They run power. They've got power pass. And it all looks identical. And that's where you get those intermediate players, the linebackers and the safeties that are in the box. You know, whether you're playing nickel or dime, you get those guys sucked up and you create those intermediate pass routes and those, you know, those 15-yard dump offs over the top of the linebackers. And those are big-time chunk yardage plays. And if it syncs up and it lines up with what you're doing in the running game, you're going to have success. But unfortunately, you know, how do you get to become a head coach in this league? If you're young, you know, and you throw the ball a lot. You know, that's what people look for. But it's the teams that run the ball and control line of scrimmage, to me, are still the teams come playoff time that are really hard to knock out.
You should know the voice. Mark Schlereth is with us here on the Venue Kings Hotline. Mark, there's been a lot of talk about that, the offenses, which Dave just asked you about. We saw great defense here in Seattle. Denver had one a couple years later. If there was a defense that was that good, would you see them able to compete with these offenses that are in the Final Four this year?
Oh, sure. Look at what the Chicago Bears did. You know, the Chicago Bears shut down some big-time offenses, especially late in the season. And, you know, they are a throwback in that, man, when Vic Fangio was there, they ran, you know, they run a 3-4 front, but it's really a 5-down front, you know, so they really kind of play like this 5-2 defense. But shoot, they match up with four linebackers. They got two guys inside, Danny Trevathan and Roquan Smith, that can run with anybody. So they'll line up and basically say, you're not going to run it on us because we've got the numbers and we've got the size advantage, and we still can cover the pass from here. And they absolutely dominated. I mean, they physically dominated the Rams, who were playing the NFC Championship just a few weeks ago. So, yeah, there are certainly teams that you've got to have. You know, you've got to have a couple of difference makers as pass rushers. And that's where you get the biggest advantage, because offensive line play across the board in this league pretty much sucks. There's only a few that are really good. So if you got a couple of pass rushers and you got some guys, some edge presence linebackers, or nickel guys that can really run and cover those intermediate underneath routes in that passing game where you're trying to get the ball out in under two and a half seconds, then you have a chance to compete. But the issue is that the NFL, like my philosophy or theory on this is, the NFL is cultivating a new base or a new fan base. And, you know, they're saying to guys like me or to guys like Dave, hey, thanks for 40 years of really enjoying our product. We really don't give a crap anymore about you. What we're doing is we're trying to get all this younger generation that we've cultivated on Madden football and playing fantasy football. We're trying to give them what they've played on the computer for the last 10 years, now that they're of age, to actually be consumers. So we want the game to look as much like Madden football or much like fantasy football as we possibly can. So what we're doing is we're changing every rule to give the offense an advantage. And, you know, and that's kind of what we're seeing in the evolution of football, in my mind, that has really kind of taken over. And that's what the difference is, in I guess, just kind of overall from my perspective.
Well, if that's the case, Mark, what's been the reaction in Denver, the hiring of a 60-year-old defensive coordinator, Vic Fangio, to be the next head coach?
Well, you know, I think that a lot of people are kind of, you know, at first it was disappointment, you know, like, oh, are you kidding me? We've got to get younger. And then, you know, it was, I mean, you know how fans are. They talk themselves into believing that it's a great hire. Now, oh, yeah, here we go. We needed some discipline. You know, he came out in his press conference and everybody was like, you know, everybody's like disappointed. And then he said, you know, he threw some cool buzz terms like, you know, death by inches. You know, if you allow guys to be undisciplined, one guy does it, the next guy does it, and then, you know, you give them an inch and take it a mile, kind of, and everybody's like, oh, this is the guy we needed. We didn't have discipline with Vance Joseph. Oh, we're going to win now, you know, and ultimately, I don't care who's coaching this team. There's just not enough talent on this team. There's not enough good offensive linemen. There's not a difference at the tight end position. They lost their best receiver in Emmanuel Sanders. You know, I mean, and their quarterback just couldn't get it done. So, I mean, we could talk all day long about what a difference the coach makes. But I'm telling you what, talent beats coaching and scheme 100% of the time.
Hey, Mark, you did a couple Seahawk games this year, and tell me what you saw in, and I'm not sure how closely you were watching last year, but as an ex-offensive guard, what did you see in the Seahawk running game that was the biggest thing that allowed them to go to the, what, number 23, number 25, I think they were, the last 2 years, and they developed into the number one running team?
Yeah, there's a couple things, Dave. They just committed to it. And it's a skill like anything else is a skill. And it has to be worked on all the time. And unfortunately, in the NFL, with the collective bargaining agreement the way it is, you know, we've collectively bargained skill out of this game, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, we're like, hey, we're not going to practice. Well, guess what? To move a guy from point A to point B against his will, you actually have to practice. So the biggest thing was commitment. This is what we're going to do. We're going to run the ball. This is how we're going to do it. I think one of the big things is the threat of Russell Wilson keeping the ball and exploiting you on the edge, both running the ball and throwing the ball. Even though he didn't do it very much, when you watch them run the zone read run, you see the whole backside of the defense freeze. Defensive end freezes. Backside linebacker doesn't constrict. You know, the safety on the backside doesn't constrict. And what ends up happening is that when you press it hard on the front side, there's a natural cutback lane where things don't get squeezed. And sometimes it's a 3 or 4 yard gain, and sometimes it's a, you know, 23 to 33 yard pop out. And so that was one of the big things, is even though Russell didn't run the ball a lot, he was incredibly effective of keeping the backside kind of stationary without constricting those backside running lanes. So there was a lot of cutback runs, and I thought that Brian Schottenheimer did a great job of not only calling plays, and I thought, you know, with Solari and all those guys, they did a great job of coaching that up, and the backs had a great understanding of how to press the front to make sure that they got enough separation from that backside that was never truly squeezing. And that, to me, was one of the things they did. And just the overall commitment to, we're going to do this, guys. And, you know, you saw it in that Green Bay game when they were down, I think, 14-3. And they just kept running the ball. They just kept running it. They kept running it. And they created some big-time plays. I called the game against the 49ers where I think Russell Wilson was 4 of 6 for 3 touchdowns in the first half. Like, that's commitment, man. And you also have to have you have to have receivers that aren't selfish, and you have to have a quarterback that's not worried about numbers. You're like, Antonio Brown couldn't play for you guys because he's a turd. So, I mean, you know, that's the reality of playing in Seattle.
Hey, Mark, I was going to ask you another offensive line question to follow up, but I'd rather get your thoughts on what you think was happening with Adam Gase's eyes.
Oh, my gosh, right? You can't get your eyes dilated right before a press conference. That's, I mean, that was bizarro. And, like, I know Adam pretty well, and Adam and I text all the time, and he hasn't returned my texts lately. And I thought, oh, no wonder. He can't see my damn text. Look at those freaking eyes. There's no way he could read his phone. I've known Adam since he was coaching Peyton Manning here in Denver. I've known him well, and I've done several Miami games where I was the coach, and he'll call me up and say, hey, come over to the facility early. Let's talk about the run game, and let's study some film, you know, just stupid stuff, you know? And I'm like, how come he's not texting me back? Did he change his number? And I was like, no, it's his eyes. They're wigged out. I couldn't tell you what was going on there, man. But it was bizarro world, wasn't it?
It was strange. Awful looking. It was strange to see. The best was somebody put a taco on there where it made it look like. Which was just too funny. That was one of the stranger things. Do we have any other non-eye questions for Stink?
No, but one of the things that I think he has to do, don't you have to, Dave? Because if you're in that locker room, you're going, okay, what's this freak show? Because everybody has Twitter, right? So everybody's seen it. Yeah. And you're like, what's this freak show doing? Don't you have to come in there, like, and have that video playing behind you when you first address your team in OTAs, and then have the little laser pointer and go, okay, you see these eyes? These are the eyes of intensity. Like, make fun of yourself a little bit in front of your team. So it, like, everybody goes, okay, he's one of the dudes, as opposed to, this guy is a weirdo. Like, I would think you'd have to do something like that.
Yeah, you'd have to joke around about it. And he didn't. He was like, we don't pay any attention to all this stuff that goes on the, you know, social media.
He was like Bobby Boucher's mom. He's like, television is the devil. And, you know, I'm like, uh-oh. Come on, dude. Right? I mean, is one of the many tools of the devil. Oh, Lord.
We got anything else for Sink?
A million thanks, but we probably got to let him go here.
Mark, we always appreciate your time. Thank you so much for coming on, man.
My pleasure, man. Be well.
5 o'clock refresh brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. He had some really interesting observations there, Mark Schlereth did, about how some of the new wrinkles we've seen instituted into game plans have affected defenses.
Yeah, and I thought that's kind of what's going on. And look, we are all making predictions, right? I mean, whether it's a player or whether it's where the direction of the NFL is going, but I thought that he most, of course, I think he's brilliant and really smart because it mostly aligns with how I think, right? Because, you know, I feel like it's just about execution and it's about getting used to it. This is no different of a wrinkle than what, you know, the read option was or run pass option. And he said, you know, as you heard, that they were doing that in high school. All this stuff is recycled. There's only, you know, as long as, you know, you have to have 7 men on the line of scrimmage and all these different rules and everything that govern, the game. There's going to be pretty much the same type of stuff. You know, there's not going to be, every once in a while you'll see a wacky formation or something like that. But for the most part, they're still running just plays, right? And, you know, we heard that from from Mike Leach. He said, you know, you watch the NFL all the time. You see elements of the air raid. And, you know, like the single, we used to run the single wing at Wooster High School, state champs 1981, Danny. I don't know why you got me saying that all the time now. But we used to, you know, there was two guys sitting back, like in a running back position, kind of squatted down, and they'd snap the ball to him. And I was like the wing guy, like a tight end, and I'd go on motion, and we'd do different crossing things. And, you know, that's the Wildcat. And, you know, all of those elements are somewhere. And so, if that's true, and if you accept that to be true, then why wouldn't defenses be able to stop it, what's going on right now? It just, to me, is, you know, maybe you have guys. I think a lot of it is the rules, you know, as far as passing and things like that, the hands to the face stuff, a lot of tic-tacky stuff that is, you know, called against the defense. And then, you know, you just got, I think, maybe right now, at this time, better players on offense than defense, you know, for this year. And maybe it's that these offenses are executing better than the defenses are. Maybe the defenses are getting sloppy. You know, that's the thing. When we talked about the read option, we talked to Gus Bradley about that, because in 2012-13, they started to run that with Russell Wilson. He said, you just have to be a lot more disciplined. There's no magic bullet. It's just that guys have to stay home. They have to read keys. And that, I think there's an epidemic of a lack of fundamentals on defenses this year. There's so many times. Remember the game that, or the play that got out the gate in the Dallas game that went around the edge? Like, where's the force guy? Why is he not? He should be there every single time to turn it back inside. And you see a lot of times where it just a lapse there. I don't see defenses attacking blockers like they should. And, you know, and guys aren't staying home and things like that. And so that's what that's all about. So it's a combination of all those things. But this whole notion that offense has gotten ahead of defense and that's the future of the NFL, I think is ludicrous. And it's one of the reasons why I'm rooting for the Pats. I'm not rooting for the Patriots because I like them. I just would like to see a good defensive plan go in and shut down. And we've seen it this year, just not very often. I mean, we saw the Chicago Bears pretty much make the Rams look totally ordinary, if not bad.
Yeah, the Cowboys did it to the Saints in that game, and then the Cowboys themselves got shut out by the Colts. So we'll see how these all unfold. Coming up next in this hour, Danny, Dave Moore, brought to you by Ornitos Premium Tequila. We have story time with Dave Wyman, and what does this week's story involve?
We're going to talk about NFL players and coaches butchering the English language.
This should be fantastic. It's coming up next.
You're listening to Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
The 5 o'clock refresh brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. Dave?
Would you call this malaprops?
Malaprops.
I don't know why I have always found this so funny. It was almost like a hobby of mine in the NFL to collect quotes from players, all different kinds. It started at Stanford, actually. There was a linebacker there who, there was a running back who had been injured, and he finally came out and practiced because after 2 or 3 weeks, and this quarter or a linebacker said to the guy's name was Scott. He says, "Hey, Scott, you made your deja vu appearance out there." Meant debut. So I thought that was really funny. And so I'd all throughout my career written things down. And there was
have
one.
You really?
Yeah. Huh. I mean, just little notes, taking notes. And I have something written that was on a Mac. I had a Mac, you know, one of the first Apple Macs that I wrote down a bunch of stuff. But mostly it's just that I remember. But, yeah, there was the nose guard that had strained his lobleep. That's how he had described his oblique. One time there was a sort of a little conversation going on because he was late. It was between him and another linebacker. And he said, "Hey, man, I was late because there was all kinds of instruction down there on that street." And the linebacker replied, "Oh, I can see why you couldn't get through it then." And, you know, we had one this year, Jess. You have the clip here. Ed Dixon, who is a super smart guy. And this goes through all positions, players, coaches, everybody. And I just have always found it hilarious.
You know, just to touch a little bit on Jerome Brown.
Yeah.
Those are the type of guys that I levitate around, you know.
So he's Ed Dixon, super smart guy.
Floating in air around
him. He's the kind of guy I levitate towards.
That's exactly right. That would be impressive if it happened.
Brock had one. He said that one of the players at one time came up to the front of the plane and told one of the traders and the doctors that, hey, so-and-so's, you know, back there. And they're like, well, what's wrong with him? And he's like, I don't know, man, but he's rolled up in the fecal position. So you better get back there.
Now, when he said that, do you imagine that he thought that the guy looked like a piece of poo and that's why he called it the fecal position?
I definitely do not think that is the case. But maybe the all-timer was a guy, Richard Smith, who I talk about. He's the double six-pack guy. And I saw him this year. He's a linebacker coach for the Chargers and just an awesome guy. But he was a guy that just would get so fired up, but you know, he would just start talking and then all of a sudden kind of stumble. I remember one time he's like, what you need to do there is you need to just get up there and just out athletical his ass. I don't think that's a thing. And then he had another one where he was up there screaming and yelling, and he said, this is pathetical and ferocious. I was like, oh man, that's a new one. So, and then the other one that where I actually had to leave the room one time because he was really mad. And you remember those old overhead projectors where you would write on a, you know, transparent piece of, like with a grease pen or whatever. And you could see he was so fired up that like spit was flying out of his mouth. And, you know, he was kind of diagramming it. And then we were watching the film. And, you know, so his comment on one of the guys is, look at this guy right here. He's running down the field. He's entirely oblivious to what's going on around him. And it was such an intense moment. I had to leave, and because he was so mad, and I was like, I was going to start laughing. But another one that he did was one time misspelled on the report. He had the Washington Redskins. And I confronted him about it, and he's like, oh, no, well, that's because of, you know, the whole political correctness thing. That we don't.
Oh,
you know,
that's why. For that,
yeah,
huh?
that's how he covered there. But text him in if you remember any of them. But you know, there's a lot of really really funny ones on the internet, and some of my favorite are this. I feel like I'm the best, but you're not going to get me to say that. That was a quote from Jerry Rice. Here's Tracy McGrady. My career was sputtering until I did a 360 and got headed in the right direction. So he turned entirely around, was continuing to go the same direction. There's a receiver, I think it was with Texas A&M. He said, our coach, he treats us like men. He lets us wear earrings. And then Ocho Cinco was responsible for the, I'm traveling to all 51 states to see who can stop me. Joe Theismann, maybe the most famous one is, nobody in football should be called a genius. A genius is a guy like Norman Einstein. These are all true, man. I looked up a lot of them, but it's just hilarious to see. My favorite was Carl Malone. I ain't going to be no scapegoat. There's a guy here
Carl was raised on a farm. So perhaps there was a situation where you had a goat that you would ride in case of emergency. Go get on your scapegoat.
Lou Duva, boxing trainer. He's a guy who gets up at 6 o'clock in the morning, regardless of what time it is. this might be my favorite. Shaquille O'Neal was asked when he went to Greece where he went, asked him if he'd visited the Parthenon. He said, I can't really remember the names of the clubs that we went to. There was a Charles Shackelford. I can dribble with my right hand. I can dribble with my left hand. I'm amphibious. Bill Cowher said, we're not attempting to circumcise the rules. Circumvent, I guess, was what. And then Drew Gooden, he said, I've had to overcome a lot of diversity. But it just always has been something that's really funny to me, and I started writing things down. A guy that was if you've watched Charger football for the last 15, 20 years, I think you'll know who this is. A very tall African-American trainer. Do you remember seeing him come out on the field? His name's James Collins, and he was the assistant. And him and I kind of bonded over this because he would, you know, tell me all the things that guys would say that were stupid, you know, while they were up taping. And then I'd bring the Richard Smith stuff in. But he's still with the Chargers, and Richard Smith happens to be down there. And so when I saw him, I texted him, and I'm like, yeah, so is he still butchering the English language? He's like, oh, my God, it's worse than ever. So it's just it's just funny how you get – I don't know why. It's not just football. I mean, you get a lot, and text it in if you have a favorite, like, malaprop. But is that how you say it, Danny?
Yeah, I got a couple of them, and these were from writers. They were from reporters who were paid to put the English words together. First was describing an athlete as a prima donna, only it was spelled PRE-M.
Like before Madonna,
before Madonna.
That person is a total prima donna. They'd happened before Madonna.
That would make me a prima donna.
That's correct.
All of us, actually.
Yeah,
I was Madonna before Madonna was cool.
Yeah. There was also patent leather shoes, only it was spelled patent, like the general, capital PATTON, for patent leather.
So
patent.
Editors did not catch these?
No, those I believe were caught and didn't make it into print, but there was a whole file of different things that reporters had done that were very silly.
See, and if this is coming from journalists, it's not everybody. I said the other day, the NFL spit you out and chew you up.
Things get backwards. And then when I was covering the Sonics, Jerome James is fantastic. Like, he was a very funny interview. He had a goofy career. Like, there wasn't much that wasn't amusing about Jerome. Nicknamed Big Snacks. Once couldn't get to a shoot around because he couldn't back his car out of the driveway in Bellevue because it had snowed. And then somebody's like, Jerome, don't you have a Hummer? He was like, oh, yeah. Then he went. Nate McMillan had said some players were being selfish, and so Frank Hughes, who worked then for the Tacoma News Tribune, went and asked Jerome. He's like, Nate talked about some guys being selfish. Who do you think he was talking about? And he goes, not me. I'm only concerned with myself.
Somebody are texting in here, water under the fridge. I've heard water over the bridge.
Yeah, water under the fridge is annoying.
This year we heard on national broadcast, Monday Night Football, pull a rabbit out of his head.
That's correct.
Oh, we did.
That was
Jason Witten.
Yeah.
2-5-3 Cam Newton. Hindsight is 50-50.
That's right. Oh, and then he also had one about we're cruising along like the Titanic.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here was Jason Witten earlier this year.
I'll tell you what, Tess, you saw Aaron Rodgers there. Blood on his elbow. Big old knee brace on, hitting the wrist, it doesn't matter. He pulls another rabbit out of his head.
At least he poked fun at himself later, though, following week.
Like Adam Gase should be doing with his eyeballs.
He's got to get some of those glasses right that have the big springs and the googly eyes on them. You got to do something to make fun of that.
The one you hear a lot, too, is frustrated.
Yes, I hear that.
He's actually frustrated, but he's thinking flustered.
Flustered and frustrated.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of the funniest guys ever, and this isn't really a malaprop, but I remember one time, I told you guys with the old, speaking of the projectors, the old 16-millimeter projectors where you'd have like a pointer. Jack Elway used to use his cigarette as the pointer. And you'll appreciate this, Jim. Remember the game that it was my junior year, but it was 1984, where Washington State put up like 600 yards against Stanford.
Was that we were down 28 points in the third quarter?
Something like that.
It was in Palo Alto.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. I was actually at that game.
Were you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got thrown out of a bar later that night.
Did you? Do you remember the name of the bar?
No, it was. We deserved to get thrown out.
What were you doing?
We drank way too much because we were celebrating. We couldn't believe the Cougs came back from 28 down and won that game.
Yeah, and it was just ridiculous. And, you know, the coaches were just like at a loss. But, you know, in the beginning of the film, you know, it's real quiet in there. And you know, there was like a long leader. So it was just like a blank showing up on the screen. And Jack Elway goes, "This is a picture of my mind."
Oh, we got one from the 206, nip it in the butt.
Put in the butt for that one.
Yeah, you don't want to stay away from that. Text in any malaprops you have. We're going to get you set for the NFC-AFC championship games next.
This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere. Everywhere. At 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
This hour, Danny, Dave, and Moore brought to you by Ornitos Premium Tequila. My dad said it's a doggy dog world. It's the name of Snoop Dogg's album instead of a dog eat dog world from the 509. Also mentioning Take the Bull by the Hands, which was Salk's wife's famous saying that she abused.
Somebody texted in that his friend once told him that he was going to get his suitcase mammogrammed instead of monogrammed.
Yeah, you could see how that would happen from time to time. Different slip-ups that happen are always very, very entertaining. We've got two great games this weekend, and I know the Seahawks aren't playing, and that takes a little bit of the charge out of it, but I'm looking forward to watching both of them. And I think you're going to see there are clear favorites, the Chiefs in one, the Saints in the other, being the home teams. But I think that you could see there are a lot of great questions that will be sorted out, and you could see scenarios in which each team won.
Yeah, you know, I guess I'm starting to soften a little bit on the whole Patriot thing. The reason why I think I would like the Patriots to shut down Kansas City and the Rams. I think that would be interesting end of the season after everybody has talked so much about the offense and how, you know, that that it's just a new league and you're not going to be able to turn it back and it's going to be 54-51 type of games. I don't think that's true. And again, I do think it's a lack of discipline on the part of defenses and just and all of that comes from, I guess you would say, coaching. I mean, I think the really well-coached team, but you need somebody who is going to take it, you know, who's going to do his responsibility. I mean, if you're a superstar and you're making all kinds of plays and, you know, maybe you're not listening as much. But, yeah, I guess I would really like to see the Patriots win and win out and shut down those two offenses. I think it would be really interesting to see what's the conversation, what's everybody talking about. And, you know, and don't say, I hate the narrative, that word. That's right up there with myriad.
Yeah, I don't like narrative.
The national narrative.
Yeah, people trying to sound smarter than they really are.
Exactly.
Well, maybe we should change the narrative about the word then.
Yeah, very funny, Danny. Yeah, so what's the story? The story has been offense this year. But, you know, the other thing that could happen that I guess would somewhat satisfy me if Kansas City's defense is able to play like they did last week, which they totally busted out of what their season numbers are. They were terrible on defense. But if they're able to have a really good game and shut down New England, and then same thing with the Rams, and I think the Rams defense has the best chance of doing that because they played really well against the Cowboys last week and held them to 300 yards.
From the 360, my husband says perbatim instead of verbatim.
Perbatim.
Let me present one counterpoint to that about how this could be good for the Seahawks. If you have two conference championship games that are both decided in the 40s and it's just a shootout, it is everything, and then the rematch in the Super Bowl is going to be the rematch of the 50-point showdown between the Rams and the Chiefs. Everybody's going to go in that direction. They're already starting to. Like, you see all of the hires, like, everybody wants young, good-looking coaches. And it's not because they just like young, good-looking coaches. It's because they want to put in place what the Rams have. Everybody's trying to copy it. The best way to defeat that isn't to do that better than them. It's to go a different way. And if everybody's searching for those things, maybe that frees up more defensive players or makes things at less of a premium. Because I know the one thing is that the Seahawks aren't going to chase that this offseason.
Yeah.
They're not going to go after it and say, like, oh, you know what? We need to get somebody that's going to spread it out and find a quarterback who has different arm slots.
Well, and even if you did do that, you'd be, Brock pointed this out on Brock and Salk, that you're still going to be coming a distant second to those types of teams that have been doing it for a long time. Yeah, there's a different way to do it. I'd be really interested to hear what Pete has to say about that, because he's a defensive coach at heart. And as you pointed out, Denver, or maybe it was you, Jim, asked Mark about Vic Fangio. You know, here's an old defensive guy and not a young. He's the opposite of Cliff Kingsbury, right? So, hey, in grade school, this is from the 206, my mother told us that there was an erection at Mount St. Helens, and it was going to affect all of us.
Well,
instead of an eruption.
Yeah. So.
Thank you for clarifying that, Dave.
That has its own legacy.
I just want to make sure everybody knew the proper word, Jess.
Yes, I appreciate that. Also, sorry for calling you Dave. That was weird.
That was weird. Why didn't you call me Wyman?
I don't know. Maybe, Sometimes I forget your first name.
I thought I was in trouble there for a minute.
Yeah.
David.
Just don't call me David Matthew. That's when I'm in trouble for my mom.
Yeah. Jim's mom also calls you David.
Yes.
Maxine.
Mm-hmm. Yes, she does. And sometimes she wants to come after you with a baseball bat.
Both
of
us.
You tell Danny and David.
Yeah. She'll be down there in March when we're there the first week for Mariners spring training.
How about this one? I could care less.
Yeah, people will
That's a tough one. I still have a hard time with that
people
one.
People will get hung
I could
up
care less,
yeah.
but I'm not. It shouldn't be, I couldn't care less.
Correct. That would indicate extreme indifference.
Tell Danny and David they can go to hell.
That's right. You're right, Mom.
Go get him, Maxine. Remember, we got a picture somewhere of her coming out there with a baseball
she
bat.
She did have a
bat. Tell those guys, they better get off your back or I'll come after them with a baseball bat.
Yeah, you get them, Maxine. You get
sweet little Maxine.
You know what I hope happens in these games this weekend?
Yes.
That the teams I bet on win. that's what I'm hoping for.
I'll tell you what, I'll go along with that.
As long as it's recreational.
Yes. Yeah, very much so.
It's Danny David Moore. We got the professor. We'll bring him in next.
I love you, but I can say without hyperbole, that was the worst analogy ever.
Wow. You sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn.
Because knowledge is power.
It's time to find out what we've learned, brought to you by Carter Volkswagen. Jess!
This has been such a fun show.
It has been a fun show.
You guys are all on it.
It was an odd first half hour, but oddly funny.
It was hilarious, and I enjoyed it. Actually, our first What We Learned comes from there. We learned a lot about what coaches and quarterbacks are like.
You know what I think would make this exercise more fun at the end? Is that when we go through these quarterbacks and coaches and their relationships, which one most closely resembles our own?
Oh, that's a good idea.
Okay.
That's a fantastic idea.
Our own marriages?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, fraught with danger, but I like it. A high wire act.
Oh, that's a
no
problem.
No net.
That's going to be a problem
Kathy
for
doesn't
me.
Listen, so
yeah.
I'm all right.
You hope.
Yeah, she might.
Well, maybe we could be compared to Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, because one of them is a fat, old, ugly guy, and the other is the beautiful, younger component of the marriage.
Okay. That's we could great. Get ourselves in trouble
that's
this
yeah,
segment, we could.
Dave too. Wyman with a kick save on that one.
Yeah.
That was quick thinking, Dave.
Well, yeah, Jim kind of sprung that on us, but Jim had some good stuff there.
Jim did. What was it? What was the coach-quarterback pairing that your marriage most resembled? I picked
Ron Rivera and Cam Newton, where Rivera is kind of henpecked and the wife wears the pants in the family. Cam Newton wears the pants there. And,
you know, I really do hope your wife is not listening to you. Otherwise, well, I have a really comfortable couch.
I'm a beta
house.
Male who married an alpha female.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So it's opposites attract.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
There's all sorts of different reasons that people pair off.
Yes.
Or don't.
Yeah. It's true.
We also learned how Wyman views Kyle Shanahan and Jimmy Garoppolo.
Don't you see him as like he would be a total idiot that people would like, how do you screw that up? And for me, it's like Billy Joel and Christy Brinkley. Like, Billy Joel, have you looked in the mirror? You had Christy Brinkley. How do you screw that up? Just be nice. Don't say stupid stuff. Just keep your mouth shut.
It's not all about looks, though, Dave.
Well, I know, but also, Christy Brinkley is like the most fantastic, put-together person ever. She sells
stuff.
Wait,
I thought I said it's not all about looks. You were talking put-together in a like, different way than I was thinking.
Smart, sharp, runs businesses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's nothing she can't
doesn't
do.
Doesn't age
yeah,
somehow.
Doesn't age. That's true.
But when I was thinking Christie Brinkley of put together, I was thinking of Sports Illustrated.
Well, I thought that was goes without saying. We all know who Christie Brinkley is in that regard. She was in Vacation.
Yes, she was.
Remember with Chevy Chase?
The idea that Billy Joel, like, how did you screw that up? That was just dumb.
Have you seen Billy Joel?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw a documentary on him one time, and he just seemed really insecure and kind of, bossy and treated like the little people crappy. And
that's probably how he screwed it up.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan either, but I love Piano Man.
Yeah, he's maybe that was musician. Back before he got too big for his britches.
Yeah.
We used to drive past... Oh, sorry.
I was just going to say, I'm too good for Christy Brinkley.
Sorry, Chris. I think I could do better.
It was a game in high school where we'd go find, because he had a house out east in the really rich part of Long Island, and we would drive to it once we got our driver's license. Be like, that's Billy Joel's house. Is Christy in there?
And did he puke or something at your high school?
Oh, no. Well, this was my uncle's high school when Billy Joel was roughly the same age as my uncle at the time. But yeah, high school prom, Billy Joel was playing his prom. And got very drunk and puked in the bathroom, and my uncle walked in, and that's his lasting memory of Billy Joel.
So Billy Joel, his picture pops up. People, it's a Piano Man. And Jess goes, that's the guy that puked at my uncle's high school.
Yeah, well, and I went to that high school, too, so I proudly can say Billy Joel puked in Sanford H. Calhoun High School.
I guess there would be a picture of Billy Joel pooping on a Husky. Anybody who gets that reference, text it in.
We also learned that we can teach Matisse Thybul something.
Stuff, Huskies!
Hey, I want to go back to high school just for a second. I noticed on your Wikipedia page anyway, you transferred from Skyline to Eastside Catholic. Why'd you do that?
I have a Wikipedia page?
Yeah, you do. I Googled your name and Wikipedia, and there you were.
Oh, that's fascinating. I'll have to check it out.
Great kid.
He's a really nice kid.
I love him.
He's fun to watch.
I root for him. Yeah, and we've talked to him. This is the second year in a row, and his parents sure did a great job with him. And somebody texted in that they know his dad and that he sounded just like his dad. So anyway, root for him. He's a complete player, don't you think?
He is a complete player. He's got a huge future in the NBA.
I hope so.
So long. He's built like Stacey Augmon, and that's kind of how he plays. He might not be quite as tall as Augmon was, but that really long, athletic defender.
Does Cal have a shot tomorrow?
No.
I don't think so either.
Better not.
Did you see him against the Cougs?
I mean, if we can beat him by 20, then, I think you guys...
You guys got Robert Franks back last night.
Robert Franks is good to see.
Yeah?
Yeah. Hopefully there'll be a bigger crowd there tomorrow.
We also learned how Mark Schlereth feels about Sean McVay.
We're looking at this from the standpoint of, hey, man, if you rubbed up against Sean McVay in the shower, you're an automatic candidate for getting a job. And like Sean McVay, I've done three of his games. He's one of the most exceptional human beings I've ever met. Like, I got done meeting with him, Dave. He's 32 years old. And I walked out of the meeting going, I've accomplished nothing in my life, and I'm nothing more than a loser. You know, that's how I felt.
Every once in a while, you see somebody that's doing something that you're not. And we talked about earlier about how we feel about our, our job, position in life. You see guys that are like CEOs and stuff like that, and go,
We make talky talk.
We make talky talk. I crack jokes. Sometimes make references to scatological references.
I don't think those people are better than us.
You think you're better than me?
I don't think anybody's better than us.
I agree, Danny. I give out winning football picks.
Yeah. World needs ditch diggers, too.
Not at the dumb end of it, the shovel. That is the headline of my resume. We finally today learned about gambling.
What? You ready to get to it here?
How about sports gambling is impossible. The end.
But it's fun.
All right.
It's fun. It's
apparently
fun.
There's an addendum.
If you're just into it for it's like drinking. You know, as long as you're drinking recreationally, it's fun. It's just when you take it too far that it's not so much fun anymore.
That's agreed.
Yeah, I think we can agree on that.
And like both, the line between the two is really fuzzy.
Yeah. I'm going to,
That was really good, Danny. It is. Very, very fuzzy.
You get in the middle
fuzzy
of it.
Fuzzy line.
And you're like, this was recreational. May not be anymore.
Yeah, there really is no definition, is there?
No.
You have to decide on your own.
Yeah, it's different.
Well, to Jim's credit, he's not like betting massive amounts that's going to affect his life.
Oh, it truly is recreational.
It's, yeah.
Yeah.
He just likes to feel something.
I'm starting to weaken on the drinking, though, I got to admit. It's day 18. I'm proud of myself that I've made it 18 days, but here it is a Friday night with a Saturday coming tomorrow. And I'm like,
Ooh, two great games on Sunday.
Coors Light sitting out there in the garage fridge.
Jim, how about if I come over to your house and hit you over the head with a baseball bat?
That's what it might take.
You lose a lot of weight that way. I'm telling you, knock yourself out at about 7 o'clock.
Jim, I need you to start writing a journal of this in the voice of Captain Andrew Luck. It's day 18, and the front weakens.
It's like 18 days really isn't that big of a deal to most people, but it has been for me.
There are social situations.
I miss it.
I'm trying really hard to make this sound better.
It's really funny.
Picture Jim like holding a bottle. I love you.
I don't think I'm going to make it 90 days.
As someone who's gone 20 months without a drink, Jim.
20?
It doesn't get any better.
So encouraging. Yeah. You know what? Danny's starting to stick it to you because you stuck it to him for a long time about, oh, you need to start drinking again. Now Danny is telling
me. My life's really boring, Jim.
20 months?
20 months.
That's got to be your greatest accomplishment ever at 43 years of age or whatever.
I'll tell you what, when's the last time that you didn't drink for 20 months? I was 13. My mom and dad are listening. I only had a couple at my freshman year in high school.
Just spaced it around.
Oh, my God.
Who puked into the Lonnie Anderson tin can?
It was Bobby Clements.
Bobby Clements.
Yeah.
Have a good weekend, everybody.
Have
a great weekend.
I want to thank Mark Schlereth. We want to thank Matisse Thibel, John Clayton. Jessamyn McIntyre is our producer. Curtis Rogers is on the board for the three of us. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. And, Jim, stay dry.
Okay, Danny.